And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, or this is a thrill for me. I feel I'm only 3 years younger than you, but I was going to say I grew up listening to you, which is just not factually correct. I did not grow up listening to you, but I'm thrilled to be joined by the host of First Take. It's been all over the airwaves for the last 20 years. The great Max Kellerman. How you doing? Man,
that's quite an introduction. I'm an admirer of your work, so that feels good to hear. It's funny because when I was first got on the scene in the national media, I would approach like – I was on Friday Night Fights 1998, and I'd approach Steve Farhood, who was the editor-in-chief of Ring Magazine. I'd see him in an elevator in Madison Square Garden, and I'd go up to him and say, Steve, I grew up reading you since I was like 11. And he always hated that because it's like, oh, it makes me feel old. But I have the opposite reaction. I love it when I hear that. Awesome.
I was a newspaper reporter in Stamford, Connecticut, covering. I don't know. I can't remember exactly when, like what hours you were on, but I was driving around a lot because I was on the cops beat. So I'm just
10
driving.
10 to 1.
Yeah. So I'm driving around, and I just heard this is 2004 to 2008.
Like
I
the
just,
late like, mornings.
Yeah. Here goes. Max is talking about Eddie Curry. Eddie Curry can get you 20 every night. Talking about the Knicks. I'm like, this is awesome. The Knicks are such a tire fire, and Max is trying to have an intelligent discussion about this crazy team.
When I took the job in L.A., because I wound up doing Afternoon Drive with Marcellus Wiley in L.A. on 7:10 a.m., when I took that job, I had to think to myself, you know, I think that your local sports guy needs to be rooting for the teams. I thought to myself, can I take the L.A. job? Well, I'm not giving up the Yankees, but the Dodgers, originally from Brooklyn. Don Mattingly's the manager. I don't have an NL team. Sure, I'll root for the Dodgers as my NL team. College football, no one cares in New York. Rutgers, no one cares. So can I take USC? Hell yeah, I could take USC.
All in.
College basketball, it's been a million years since St. John's was relevant. Could I take UCLA? Yep. Football, they don't have a pro team. No problem. I'm not giving up my Giants. Can I swap the Knicks?
No.
Diehard Knicks fan for the Lakers? Well, that took me a couple days of reflection because I would not have taken the job if I couldn't do that. I don't think it would have worked. And I thought, what am I thinking about? This bum franchise, the New York Knicks, run by the worst owner in sports. At the time, I was like 38 years old. I'm 45 now. At the time, I was like 38 years old, 37 years old. My entire lifetime, zero championships. I've always looked at the Lakers as, why aren't the Knicks like that? Yeah, hell yeah, I could trade them in. And I became a Lakers fan, and I remain so to this day.
Well, it's worked out for the Lakers. They're now over 500 with Bron. And I'll tell you, though, your old team,
yeah,
with the worst owner in sports,
yeah,
who may now ban me. I don't know. We may have just both gotten banned from MSG.
Yeah, whatever.
I won't be able to wait 10 minutes.
Like Charles Oakley?
Yeah, I won't be able to wait 10 minutes to take the one elevator that they herd everybody into up five floors in like 30 minutes.
I got to say, though, the new PR and everything is a huge upgrade over the old guys.
It's they actually have been good. And, yeah, and like
But, Zach, I bring all that up just to say when you are hosting a show – and we had the Knicks rights and everything. You're the Knicks flagship station, right, and all that. You got to be rooting for the team. You got to be optimistic. You have to look for some kind of optimism. So if you are how'd you describe it, a dumpster fire?
Tire fire.
Tire fire?
Yeah, some sort of fire.
It did stink. Maybe tire fire is even better. But you got to be looking for some kind of silver lining. You can't be all doom and gloom. You have to have some hope.
Oh, Frank Ntilikina made a shot tonight. The jumper looks better. But I will say, they gotta be doing backflips today at MSG and in, wherever they practice in Westchester, because I think this Warriors stuff is real. And it was funny to, text and talk with as many people on the team, with the team, around the team as I could over the last 12 hours. And there was an interesting division between, we've been through this before. This is no big deal. This is Draymond being Draymond. Like, no one's going to care. This is strange, and this is a suspension without pay, which they have never done before, not even when Draymond went at Kerr in 2016 with Lisa Salters right outside the door listening to everything. Marcus Thompson put it beautifully in The Athletic today. I mean, Steve Kerr, I love him. He's a great coach. He goes up there last night and says, we don't talk about Kevin's free agency. It's not something we talk about it. I believe that maybe they don't talk about it. It is 100% causing tension within the organization. It has been for 2 years. And from what was written and what I heard, that came up. I don't think it was the number one subject of Draymond's tirade at KD in that game, nor do I think it was the number one subject of whatever happened in the locker room after the game, which doesn't seem to have been as big a deal to KD as what happened on the floor. But it came up, and it's just hovering. It's hovering over everything. So, I don't really know. It's serious, but at the same time, like, these guys should walk to the championship this year. They're just so much better than everybody
injury,
else.
Sure. I would say that, if the Celtics could get it together, still the Warriors. I would say this. Draymond Green, it's an interesting team, the Warriors, because the best player is KD, but it's Steph's team. He's the thing that makes them the Warriors.
You've been definitively on KD's just better. He's a better player than Steph.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure that's true.
Listen, in a sport that selects out for height because the basket is 10 feet in the air, the taller player who's very skilled will always have – the whole idea of small ball – is really five out. It's not about the height of the players. If you can get larger
skill ball players
who can play, that's even better. You know, that's why AD and KD. When you think about the best players in basketball, every single one of them, you have your top five, will be better than 6'7". LeBron James is the best player in basketball. Who's number two? I would argue Kawhi Leonard, but you want to argue KD? Do you want to argue the Greek Freak, or do you want to argue AD? You're talking about giants.
The top seven in the NBA right now is just absolutely stacked.
Right, but they're all tall.
Except Steph,
but I wouldn't say Steph is as good as KD AD or Kawhi or who else did I mention? Or Antetokounmpo.
Giannis, yeah. That was very well done.
Oh, was it?
Sometimes I chicken out on Antetokounmpo.
Yeah. You did it better than me just then.
Sometimes I start it and I go back to Giannis.
But you can freak it different ways. Like Antetokounmpo.
That's why people call him Giannis. But, let me defend my Steph thing.
Okay.
And Steve Kerr, none other than Steve Kerr, has called Kevin Durant the second best player in basketball over Steph. Yeah. I just think that we have grown so accustomed to the shots he can make that we do not appreciate how unprecedented they are.
You have to do it in high-leverage situations, Zach. You have to do it.
He has.
No, wait a minute. This is real in sports. There are players who stay the same under pressure. They tend to get more credit than they deserve for being pressure players. I'll give you an example. Kobe Bryant.
Derek Jeter,
no doubt. Until recently, Tom Brady. Tom Brady's actually jumped a level. Now he actually elevates under pressure. For the vast majority of his career, he's just the same guy. Jeter, Brady, and Kobe. Then there are guys who actually get better. Like Mariano Rivera and Michael Jordan are the best to ever do it in their sports.
I hated Mariano Rivera
much. Under pressure, they clearly every time got significantly better. Okay, there are also players who get worse. Peyton Manning consistently got worse. Steph Curry is not the same guy in the highest leverage moments. Now, the question is why? Is it a psychological? No. It comes down to a physical issue. In baseball, if you don't have a fastball, right, the junk ballers don't do well in the postseason because they're playing against other smart players who know how to – they also have scouting reports and all them. All the James Harden Euro-stepping stuff does not work as well if you – what plays in the postseason are the big, strong, fast guys who are also talented.
I will say that there is for sure something to that. I was in Portland all last week. I'm going to write something on the Blazers. You talk to people around the league, like the phrase great regular season team comes up because Lillard and CJ, they're not small for their positions, but they kind of play a little small and they can be attacked defensively. And people around the league, the consensus is, hey, they may finish second in the West this year, regular season, but I want
to get back to Steph for a second. Okay. Steph Curry, I was with where you are, even maybe past where you are in terms of my like praise of him. Several years ago, during the 73-win season, I came out and said, Space Jam should star Steph Curry, not LeBron James. It's Steph's world. I know that in no other era would Steph be better than LeBron. But in this era,
this is the one he plays in.
The way this game is played, in fact, whether it's fair or not, whether it's a quirk of the rules, whether it's a parlor trick, just shooting from deep, in fact, the way this game is played, that's the guy. Also, the kids identify with him. It's Steph's world. And then the playoffs started, and LeBron left no doubt. In fact, it was LeBron's world. He's better than Steph, and it's not close. It's not like, hey, Steph is half as good. It takes Steph and another superstar to equal the value LeBron brings to a team when you think of the results that they've gotten. And my point is this. I'm not sleeping on Steph. I'm not hating on him, but I'm also not running from what we've learned about him. Under the most intense competition on the biggest stages, he is not as effective a player as he is during the regular season.
So I wonder how much of this would go away if he had won Finals MVP the first year they won. When I voted for LeBron, who didn't win because they lost the finals.
Right. Until this year, LeBron's been the MVP of every finals he's ever played in, and it's not close.
I voted for LeBron. Right. Andre Iguodala won. Andre had a wonderful series. Steph was the most valuable Warrior in that series. That will go down as a wrong vote, I think. Steph was better in that series. All the double teams, all the Steph gets double teamed, Draymond hits Iguodala in the corner who one's within 20 feet. From Steph.
I understand that, and I've learned part of it. I've learned of this idea and appreciated it and have kind of integrated into my thinking from reading you, actually, to tell you the truth. And I thought that was very well done the way you described it at the time. Hey, Steph actually, don't just look at the scoring and everything. He's helping his team. The point is how the team is functioning.
There's no question about that.
They won 73.
Not that year.
The first year
they won it, I think they won 67 and 15.
Right. Oh, you're talking about the first
one. When Andre was named Finals MVP.
It's funny because that was the first kind of hint that maybe Steph wasn't as good in the playoffs as he was in the regular season. And because of what you wrote, I started arguing, no, in fact, Steph is fine. He doesn't suffer from this. Any kind of idea that he chokes is BS. And read the smart people about this.
I still think it's BS.
Well, then the next season showed it's not fluky. LeBron had, those teams were not comparable. Steph was on a much, much, much better team. And it came down to the wire, and in fact, they lost.
Yeah,
and if Steph would have played like a superstar, I was there in Game 7. They couldn't buy a point in the last 4 minutes of Game 7 at home.
I mean, neither team really
If you
really
want
could.
To be in the idea of the discussion of the best player in the game, score a point in the last 4 minutes at home in Game 7. A point. I'm sorry, dude. And by the way, it's not just that, Zach. He was careless passes, throwing the ball away.
That was ugly. So I don't want to relitigate the was Steph hurt in 2016. Right. I don't want to relitigate.
Fine.
Here's all I'm going to say. Number one, they have never played well when Steph is injured, even when KD's on the team.
No doubt.
Never
don't
played
disagree
well.
With that, yeah.
Number two, I think part of appreciating Steph is watching the other teams play. And by that I mean, this has crystallized for me several times, never more so than when I was doing like a little thing on Jamal Murray before the season. He was one of my most intriguing players for the season. And one of my frustrations with Jamal Murray, and one of the Nuggets' frustrations with Jamal Murray, is he doesn't take enough off the dribble threes. And so you watch these clips, he goes around a screen and you freeze it right there. And you're like, oh, he's got a window. He's got a window. Like, that defender is a couple feet behind his hip. The big guy's not up far enough. And then you kind of you look at it again, you're like, that defender can kind of actually touch his hip from behind. And that big man's like just below the 3-point line. Steph has made us, has brainwashed us into thinking like, those are plausible shots. Mm-hmm. Like, he makes implausible shots for shooters. Can't even approximate them.
More than that, that's absolutely true, I believe. I also think that the culture of the team, the fact that the ball doesn't stick with him, the fact that he's setting off-ball screens, like, willingly, seemingly, happily.
He's Tim Duncan of now.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great way to put it. He doesn't look the same, but he's Tim Duncan of now. And when push comes to shove, as great as we believe Tim Duncan is, right? When push comes to shove, he's just outside the top 10. And when push comes
I would have to go through it because
five bigs you're taking before Tim Duncan.
Five?
Just bigs. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to assume Russell, Chamberlain, Kareem.
Yeah.
Or who else?
Olajuwon.
You're taking Dream over Tim?
The only thing Duncan did better than Olajuwon was pass. Olajuwon did everything else better than Duncan.
Defensively, Hakeem is one of the greatest of all time.
Yes.
So is Timmy.
Yeah, but when push comes to shove, this is what you're going to do. A lot of hand-wringing.
So you're talking about,
and then you're going to take
you're going to talk about leverage situations, though.
Mm-hmm.
Tim has 5 rings, yeah. And you're talking about one of the all-time.
If he played in Jordan's era, you have 0 rings.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Hakeem had 0 rings when Jordan was playing basketball.
Right, and then Jordan retired for 2 years, and we got a window into, who's the best player in basketball other than Jordan?
Tim Duncan was in college.
Hakeem. I'm not saying Tim Duncan wasn't among the all-time greats, the greatest power forward who ever lived. On the center's list, you're taking Shaq before Duncan. at his height, at his peak? Yeah, you are.
I got to tell you, your test of raising your game in the postseason, that's Tim Duncan postseason. Anyway, we're getting sidetracked.
Yeah.
A dynastic team is potentially, possibly crumbling. Now, I think that's a little bit strong, but I just want yesterday were like, you know, I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing that these guys are going at each other. Now that we've had a day to digest this, KD, like, very terse last night after the game, doesn't want to talk about it. It's very clear that he and Draymond have not talked and that something has happened. Are you more worried now?
Yes, in terms of my initial assessment. Oh, it's okay. No, there's a larger issue going on here. Obviously, these guys don't like each other. I think that this is more of an excuse for Golden State to do what they want to do anyway than it actually changes anything. I think Golden State, anyone in their right mind, would want to retain KD over Draymond, and it's not a knock against Draymond. But in addition, when you have the heart and soul of your team guy, like, what makes the Warriors, number one, this is how we got off on that tangent, is Steph Curry and his ability to do all, like, to be unselfish, not, the ball doesn't stick, and also be this mobile artillery unit, right?
Yeah.
Like Steve Nash 2.0, but better in every way. And also shoot from such range, not all threes are created equal, that now you have the rotations are slower to get to the next guy, and guys like Draymond Green may shoot 38% 1 year from three because Steph Curry gives them forever to shoot the ball. Okay. Yeah. The next guy who makes the Warriors, is Draymond Green. And you can play five out because you have Draymond Green. You can do all kinds of stuff. And he can just switch on all five. He can guard all five to varying degrees of success.
No, he can. Yeah. He's one of the only guys. People say that.
But there's between switching and guarding, right? Yeah. Like, and he can do, so he allows them to be the Warriors. So it's an interesting team in that KD's the best player, in my opinion. You may feel it's Steph. Steph is the most important player and it's his team and he gives them their identity. The third most important player and the other guy, even ahead of Durant, who makes them the Warriors, is Draymond. And then, of course, Clay is like, as Woody Allen once said, swatting a fly with a Buick. Like, you could have Danny Green on that team. They'd still win the championship because he's going to get a lot of open looks from three and play defense. Clay is just makes it silly what he can do.
Okay. You're not downplaying how great Clay is. You're just
Like, as I said, swatting a fly with a Buick. Okay. It's so much more than you need to win a championship once you have
KD.
Does
Buick still exist?
I don't know.
Buick went bankrupt.
But the idea is a big clunky car. Anyway. Yeah. My point is this. In that situation, tough to get rid of Draymond. Like, the modern NBA is basically the story of, in terms of style of play, Steph 1 and Draymond 2. Everyone's looking for Draymond. Oh, Al Horford can do what Draymond can do, plus block shots, right? Oh, he's the prototype. AD is like the superstar version of that, but it's every team is looking for Draymond Green. How do you get rid of that guy? Here is the perfect excuse. He is in slight physical decline already. His shooting from three has cratered.
As we talked about before the show, underplayed storyline, because nothing has happened to the Warriors. They're too talented for anything to happen to them. But one of the things that has happened to them is that Draymond can't shoot anymore. And there was a window two and three seasons ago where it's like, oh, if he's a league average three-point shooter.
He's better than that.
Yeah. Those are great looks because he's just, no one is going to guard him anywhere. And now it's like no one's going to guard him anywhere. And sometimes he doesn't want to shoot and he can't make shots anymore.
Right. And also his defense isn't quite what it was. It doesn't seem to the naked eye. And so do you really want to pay that guy what it's going to take? But now you have the perfect excuse to trade him. And by the way, he'll fetch a lot right now.
Well, it's interesting you say that. They're not going to trade him.
I think they are.
You think they're going to trade him?
I think they're going to trade him at the end of the year. They're not while you're pursuing a championship and likely to win. I think at the end of this season, I'm not talking about the middle of next season. I mean, before the season starts, I think their priority is to sign KD. They will do everything in their power to do that. And it's a muscular move. It dovetails with the idea that you can get value for a guy who would otherwise be hard to trade and not have to pay for his decline. I think they move him in the offseason.
Well, obviously, domino one is what KD decides to do. If he leaves, they just run it back with what they have. Listeners! You know that I love anything that can save me time, and 3 or 4 years ago, for stupid old me, buying tickets to sporting events was becoming one of the things that took too much time. Oh my God, did I visit 14 different sites on the secondary market? Oh, I forgot to visit that one. Oh, am I getting ripped off? Let me see where that seat is. Suddenly an hour that I don't have has passed. SeatGeek has solved all those problems. It pulls millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for a price that you're actually willing to pay. It searches multiple ticket sites. It grades every ticket based on value. You have little green dots for good deals and red dots for not so good deals. It's so easy to search. You know you're getting everything, and it's easy to see what the deal is. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. You can do not just sports, but comedy, Broadway shows. They helped me get tickets to Hamilton last year. And best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's not nothing. That's like a good portion of an NBA ticket. You can get a lot of get a good seat at the Barclays Center for a little bit more than that. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, LOW, today. That's promo code LOW, the name of this podcast, my last name. Bam, $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets. I'm surprised how many people, and I polled whatever number of people informally about this, would Draymond get a max on the open market? Because my inclination was probably not, for all the reasons that you're saying. Klay will get a max. You fit Klay anywhere. Klay's plug and play. He's historically great at what he does. Everyone loves Klay. He's going
to be. If you were a team, would you give him a max?
Yeah,
I wouldn't.
He's going to.
By the way,
it depends.
Michael Thompson's a buddy. I love Klay. I hope he gets all the money in the world. I'm talking about in a salary cap league. Do you give Klay Thompson a max deal?
No, it depends what your context is. If you are a team that is going to look at him as like, we're going to give him the ball every possession because we don't have anything else, that's bad. If you're the Lakers and you're like, we got LeBron on our team, we need someone who fits with him that's an elite talent on both ends of the floor.
Who can defend on the other end.
And I think Klay's defense has been a little bit overrated, but he's good.
He's good, yeah. But the problem is this.
And LeBron's 35.
You can twist it however you want. Like the Reggie Miller, Michael Redd, like Allen Houston, if he had a little better three-point shot, not just a good shooter. That kind of player tends to be a little overvalued, because especially if he can play defense, because – he can do all those things, plus he can put the ball on the floor competently. So you start to think of him differently than you really should. Because the other team wants Klay to put the ball on the floor. If Klay is putting the ball on the floor and making decisions with the ball, that's the worst version of the Warriors. In a salary cap league, where it's really hard to fit three max deals in, if you're going to give him your max contract, you better have a guy on a rookie deal like Jason Tatum or someone like that. Otherwise, you won't win a championship. Because your second best player is a guy who really can't get his own shot. And nor can he really distribute the way he's not really a combo guard. He's a great perimeter shooter. He is the ultimate 3-and-D guy. But that's what he is. If he's more than a 3-and-D guy, I'd like to know how.
It's not unfair. I mean, he can attack closeouts and throw some good passes, but he's not going to take the ball and run 20 pick and rolls a game. It's just not what he's going to do.
So if you give him a max, you are excluded.
Well, you brought up another context, okay, which is if I have a couple of guys on rookie deals and the timing ends up. So you're going to find four teams that contextually,
under those circumstances,
it makes
sense. Are the Lakers under that circumstance?
I think the Lakers are. I mean, the Lakers can't run this team back next season.
No. But I think you got to just hope and pray and do everything you can to get Kawhi Leonard. Because Kawhi Leonard gives you a shot. LeBron and Kawhi might win a championship. LeBron and Klay will not.
Well, LeBron and Klay will not. It's easy to say that. Everything we're talking about is like if KD leaves, people are going to say, "Oh, they're just the Warriors that won 73 games." Well, they're not, because Andre Iguodala is 5 years older. Harrison Barnes,
no, they're not
close. Who has not done anything really significant in Dallas, but was good in the role that he was in, not only offensively but big enough to defend fours and all that stuff. Livingston's old. Bogut was good for them. People laugh at Bogut now. Bogut was good for them. Like, it's just not.
Well, listen, under ideal circumstances for the Warriors, Klay would already be under contract. You move him and Draymond for AD, right? Yeah. Like, if the Lakers, like Rich Paul, right, with AD, if the Lakers figure out that Ingram and Lonzo Ball, plus you have to give up Kyle Kuzma, can fetch you Anthony Davis, then of course Klay Thompson at a max contract works, because then you certainly will win a championship. But that's my point. If Klay is on a max deal, you better have a second best player who's practically an MVP. He's got to be, if a five-star player is MVP, four is all-star, three is league average starter, let's say, two is a rotation piece, and one is replacement level, then I would say LeBron's six, right? Like, he's above everybody. You better have another 4.5 on your team at least if you give Clay a max.
But that's how it works. Like, that's just how, if you want to win a championship, that's just what you need. And
that's
like,
what I'm saying. So unless you either have, inhibit you from doing that or they help you.
Unless you have the number one guy, and that's LeBron, which case he can take Kevin Love and Kyrie and, you know, Kevin Love's injured and all this, so he can take them to the championship. What KD is, so to some degree, this is a Draymond versus Kevin Durant issue. I think those guys have an affection for each other or have had an affection. I don't want to just make it seem like that's all it is, that there's animosity between them and that's the whole issue. But the franchise, to your point, if cornered, will pick Kevin Durant over Draymond Green. And there's no question about that.
Everyone now, except for people in Draymond's family. And maybe a few of them are taking are we talking about basketball? Then the answer is Kevin Durant.
But I want to talk about this year's team and the possibility that the fissures opening now are going to hurt this year's team. Because I do think those things are real. And Marcus Thompson had this in his story today, and others have had it. Like, the free agency thing, you know, they joked about it when they came to New York and they saw the billboards and Andre said, hey, welcome home, KD. Like, and you know, it was intimated in that story, and it's been intimated to me from people that, like, resentment is too strong of a word. I would say mild annoyance that this is just because he signed this 1+1, that this is just going to hover over them all year long. And this is – so we all thought the cost of signing with the 73-win team was the morons on Twitter with the snake emojis and poking fun at him. This is the cost. What he's living now is the cost, because he's not LeBron. LeBron can do whatever he wants and sign 1+1 deals in Cleveland because he's undisputed.
He's doing you a favor if he's playing for you. Yeah.
He's the best player. You have been nothing and continue to be, by the way, nothing but a pile of just nothing without LeBron. Like, Cleveland without LeBron just has no record of
There's never been anything like it.
It's like they might sign me and you by accident. It's like there's no competent. There's just nothing.
They were so bad once he left, like the moment he left, that they drafted Anthony Bennett one overall and still had enough talent to lure him back. Yeah. They drafted first overall 3 out of 4 drafts.
It was crazy. But this is the cost. The cost is you're free to sign 1+1. Like, all power to the players. I like that. I think players should empower themselves in however way they feel possible. I don't even get that annoyed with the trade demands and all that. But this is the cost. And the cost is, hey, man, like, we won before you got here. Like, we won before you got here, and it's cool that you signed 1+1, and we're happy that you're a free agent and you're going to make all your money, but like...
No, well, they didn't win before they got there.
They won once, and they made the finals.
Hold on.
You're going to say that...
Of course, listen, if your second and third best player are unavailable to play, you won by default. And by the way, it was too difficult.
I dismiss...
They won in 6 games in... Zach,
all default arguments.
Why?
I dismiss all,
they weren't
because
on the court.
If you and I went back through NBA history, we would go through every playoff run and find.
I'm not talking about playoff run. I'm talking about finals matchup.
Okay, but then you can parse it any way you want.
No, wait. Show me another example of a finals in which the second and third best player, who were both all stars, didn't play. James Worthy against the Bulls. That's one guy. I'm talking about two guys.
We take off
James Worthy and someone other than Magic Johnson.
We might not be able to, but we would find other playoff runs with key players getting
injured. And by the way, they always that team always lost. So the point is, it does make a huge difference. Okay, look,
they don't have to apologize for that. That's a championship.
It's not about them apologizing. It's about our honest assessment. Our honest assessment, if LeBron had played them with Kyrie and Kevin Love, and they were missing Klay and Draymond.
The Cavs win.
Right, and do we give the Cavs full credit for that, or do we say they were playing a severely depleted Golden State team?
Do you give the Cavs credit?
But you also have to describe honestly what just happened. Right. So my point is, they won a championship, yeah, but we know what that was. The only reason they won the championship that year is they didn't have Kyrie and Kevin. They went to 6 games without their second and third best player, and this is before the 73-win team. Zach, there is no way they beat LeBron James if he was crew deep, that if he was fully loaded that year. 6 games without the 2 best players?
They would have been the favorites.
But they, right. In other words, what I said earlier about Steph in the biggest situation, LeBron James elevated a bum squad to 6 games against the Warriors.
I voted him MVP on a losing team.
No doubt. He was worth any 2 MVP level players in the league.
Well,
what you're doing is
articulating what is a very worthy rebuttal to the "this is the cost of joining a 73-win team," which is, I just won Finals MVP twice in a row. I'm Kevin Durant. Give me the ball.
Right. Well, he should have gotten the ball.
And then don't snap back at
Kevin,
me.
He's right. Kevin Durant's right about that. But I disagree with you about on the premise that, like, all the idiots on Twitter are saying, no, you can't. The problem with KD joining that team was that he's reverse engineering legacy. So in other words,
but he didn't, and I think that's what he's living through now.
He did. He reversed engineered legacy.
But I don't think, and I think he feels it. I think he feels it. I spent the whole finals, it was a short finals. All I did was work on a profile of Kevin Durant. And the whole goal of it was, I want to figure out what makes this guy tick. And what I came away with was, I don't think anyone really knows, including him. And I talked to, I don't know how many dozens of people, everybody on the Warriors. And let me tell you, the Warriors are great storytellers. Everybody, top to bottom. They know how to tell a story. And if they trust you and they like you, they're going to let you in a little bit. They shut the door, all of them, top to bottom. Shut it. Like, wouldn't give me anything. And my reaction to that was, A, they don't know what to make of him. And B, I really, to my core, and they'll never say this on the record, they may never say it off the record, I think mid-season last year there was a period of time where they were worried he was going to leave last year. And not until the playoffs did they start to feel secure, like, okay, he's staying. So I don't know. I think he's a hard guy to know. He's unknowable to some degree, even to people who have coached him and played with him for years. I think he feels on some level he hasn't gotten the legacy points from this. He hasn't.
Nor does he deserve them.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
He does deserve the fact that you can say, if whatever, there were the finals, guys were missing shots, he stepped up this year, and last year he won LeBron James's MVP award. LeBron James is the best player on the floor, two finals ago. The first one should have been LeBron's in a losing effort. This one, KD deserved. But he was able to do all that. Like, I saw him in the playoffs against the Warriors when he was on OKC. Not so good in Game 7. Like, you know, he was not elevating that team in Game 7. Then LeBron stepped onto that same floor in a Game 7, and his team won. And that's not coincidental. That's causal. Because LeBron is as great as KD is, LeBron's just clearly the greater player. And KD, it's really a tribute to LeBron James that KD went to Golden State. A 73-win team looked at LeBron James and said, we can't beat this guy.
No, that's absolutely true.
And Kevin Durant, who's one of the four or five best scorers who ever lived, and among the most versatile defenders, looked at LeBron James and said, I got to go join that 73-win team. It's really a tribute to LeBron that this even exists. But I want to get to what you said about KD the person. This is really interesting to me. There was a really good short story in The New Yorker, I want to say last year, called...
You're already elevating the discourse of this podcast to unprecedented levels.
Called, I think, Cat Person or something like that, about a young woman who goes on a date with a guy. And the real point of the story was, we map onto people preconceived ideas and sometimes ideals, like what we'd like to see in people. And we this is partly where stereotypes come from, partly. Not the ideal part, but the idea that it makes the world easier for us to understand. If we group people, if we map our own prejudices onto people, our own points of view. And I think with KD, the question is, does he know himself is separate? And I could imagine it would be difficult to know oneself if you're always treated differently than everyone else because you have this remarkable, unique talent, one in a billion talent, right? And also you're in a fishbowl from the time that you're 18 years old and a professional player is from the time you're 19. But the people around him and the way we perceive him, the easy story to tell was small town kid, real nice guy, country kid. In the NBA, he's kind of down home and aw shucks, and it's just easy to tell that story.
Sure.
And it's kind of nice to believe it because you think it casts him in a flattering in a way, and maybe even to ourselves, an unthreatening light. It casts him in a way that people are comfortable with. But of course, as is often the case, the truth is so much more interesting. KD is an angry guy, we see it at times, and as everyone is, but he especially seems to be thin-skinned at times. We've seen him evolve from a kind of guy who's fake in public, which we all are to one degree or another. Anyone who's especially in public life has to have a public-facing face. But his in particular, you know, fake Twitter accounts and everything, and he just never seemed, once we really started focusing our attention on him, comfortable in his own skin. And what I see from him recently is really interesting because I see the maturation of a kid, 19-year-old kid, when he's in the league, to a 30-year-old man who's now dealing with things more honestly, who seems to have assessed the situation and said, you know what, there's only so much I can hide. I might as well be honest at times, right? Like, it doesn't help me to lie.
And I think the Warriors culture has helped bring that out of him because that's the way they operate there.
But the idea that he's just this nice kid, no, that render it neuters him in a way for people that I think is they're comfortable with. But in fact, he's complicated. He's interesting. He's angry. He's a much more interesting character, I think, than we originally gave him credit for. And I think it is instructive that guys like you who actually will go to the team and hang out there and do an in-depth piece and try to reach a conclusion without walking in behind these kind of assumptions and generalizations, that kind of reporting and storytelling is important and more interesting than the kind of fiction we spin when we just don't have enough facts.
I can't imagine how hard it is to find a good job candidate in the morass of resumes and job ads that are out there. There are job sites that send you tons of the wrong resumes to sort through. That isn't smart. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter, and specifically ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, the name of this podcast, to hire the right person. It doesn't depend on candidates finding you. ZipRecruiter finds them for you. It has powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, experience for your job, and then actively invites them to apply so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. That rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. Literally, it cannot come cheaper than that at this exclusive web address. ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. The name of this podcast, ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
It's interesting you use the phrase thin-skinned, because I do think one of the undercurrents that's happening with the Warriors right now is a little bit of as much as everyone there, I think, agrees that Draymond went too far. That's why he was suspended. Like, the Warriors want to downplay this. This is no big deal, not big deal. You suspended the guy without pay. It's never happened before. It's a big deal. Sorry, it's a big deal. Is some are taken aback by how seriously KD seems to have taken the comments, how hurt he and angry he seems to have been, because I think they're just used to, like, this is what Draymond's going to fly off the handle 20 times a season. He's going to yell at you. He's going to use really bad language that is not okay. And he's going to cut – he's very smart about his word choice. He's going to cut you to the core. And it's like, yeah, deal with it. It's Draymond. It'll go away in a day. And I think there's an undercurrent within the team of, like, wow, KD's really, like – it's really hurt. Like, this is a little – not faulting him, but just I think they've lived with Draymond much longer than he has. And just, you know, we're just like, this is what happens and you deal with it. And, like, they didn't expect this kind of pushback from KD, and part of it is what happened on the floor. Like, KD wanted the ball.
Should have gotten the ball, too.
And by the way, I appreciate Steve Kerr's fidelity to the, like, we're better in transition. We're just going to go in late-game situations. 6 seconds is – which is about exactly what they had when Draymond gets possession of the ball and his momentum turns up court. That's about the minimum amount of time I want without calling a timeout, because all you're getting in that situation is one pass. One pass, and whoever gets the ball is going to shoot. And it's not whether it's KD or Clay. Like, they'll get a 32-footer contested leaning for those guys, an okay shot. I did feel like, and I felt it watching live, I'm surprised he's not calling a timeout. And it's easy to say none of this happens if Steve Kerr calls a timeout, because that's not true. This is going to happen at some point. This festering stuff about KD's free agency, it's going to happen
at some point. If part of your kind of tutelage in the league came under Phil Jackson, this is the kind of thing he let guys do. It wasn't Phil's, for all the talk of the triangle and how outdated it became, he ran a lot of pick and roll with the Lakers second time around, but he's not prescriptive. Like, what made Phil Jackson a great coach was he wasn't writing prescriptions. Just do this. And no, he's saying you're going to have to think the game. You're going to have to work through your issues. You're going to have to do these things. And as much as Steve Kerr comes from Popovich, he comes from Phil Jackson.
And Draymond's right to say, hey, man, I've been making plays in transition here since before you got here. And the players on the team are right to say, Draymond's right. And KD's right to say, yeah, you made a bad play. And by the way, you didn't win any more championships until I got here after that first one.
If KD is open and it's the end of the game.
Absolutely.
Are you kidding? Just give KD the ball.
And I think there's a sense within the team that they're both right and they're both wrong. And that makes me optimistic that if they can get those two guys in a room.
Why does that make you – why do you want to be optimistic about it? It's less interesting if this team is a juggernaut.
No, I don't. Okay, fine. Optimistic. I want – well, first of all –
I want them to be less good than they can be, so we have an interesting season.
By the way, over all this, what you just said is you don't want them to be a juggernaut, et cetera. Like, the weird thing about this is they came into the season destroying everyone, and everyone on the team was like, man, we feel pretty refreshed. Like, everything's going great. The groove here is great. Like, Cuz has enlivened us again. We got something to experiment with. Like, everyone's happy, and then bam.
I think part of this has to do with Draymond, who's brutally honest with everyone, right, being a little self-deluded. He is aging. He does not have the same kind of athletic ability that others who have, you know, young man skills that can evolve into old man skills have. He kind of has been an old man skills kind of guy for his career. There's nowhere to really go from there. As his skills are eroding, and they added another great player, his role in the team is a little bit diminished. And he needs to take real stock of himself and where he is in his career and be as honest with himself as he wants to be with other people.
I think you're cat ladying him though.
Yeah, maybe. Why am I cat ladying him?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if any of that's true until I talk to the guy.
Oh, but his behavior toward KD.
Oh.
I'm basing it on his behavior. Now, from afar, yes, but you hear a few things, but his behavior says that he doesn't understand what's happening on the team. You have, as I said, one of the greatest – like, okay, there's Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and then probably Kevin Durant. Like, talking about one of the five greatest scorers who ever lived in his prime. And you got the ball, and he's open clapping for it. Maybe get him the ball. Like, what are you, standing on principle? I don't even think it was the right basketball play. So
it's not a good basketball play.
Right. So, you know, he's also – he doesn't – like, you know, a lot of Draymond's fire comes from righteous indignation. Like, he feels like he has the moral high ground. I don't even think he has the moral high ground here. I don't think so.
I don't think the consensus within the team is that neither has the moral high ground and neither has the moral low ground. They're both sort of, you know, like both of them are a little bit at fault for what happened and both of them are a little bit, you know, not at fault for what happened. Back to Draymond aging and stuff like this. I didn't get to finish it before, but like all those people, I was surprised how many of the people I asked said, oh, he'll get a max. It might be a 2+1 or a 3+1, but somebody will give him the max because I'm not a max.
Max means the most years for the most money.
So like Anthony Davis may never take a max again in his career then.
Right, but it'll be available to him.
Right. Yeah. Okay, fair. I wasn't 100% convinced that even those maxes, mini maxes, whatever, were going to be available to Draymond for exactly the reasons you state. And his aging has always been fascinating to me because his brain is his most important athletic asset, and that is age proof. And so, and that's what I think you mean by old man skills, right? Like, but I'll get to it. And so it's easy to look at that and say, well, his brain is going to age like Klay Thompson shooting, i.e. it's never going to go away, and so he should be age-proof. But I look at him, and his body type, shorter than his position, long arms, sure, doesn't really jump high, and gets by because he sees what's going to happen before anybody else, and he arrives at the rim before anybody else would and makes a play. And that's partly because of his brain and partly because he has quick feet and all that and long arms. But, like, his margin for error on those plays is zero. He barely gets there because nobody else would. He makes the plays that nobody else would.
He's relying on spidey sense.
And you barely get there. That's the nature of making a play that nobody else would make is you barely make it. And it's the same thing on offense. He gets all these weird floaters and layups where you think, man, that ain't going in. And it's like he just gets enough space. And I've written this before and I've said this before. I am very interested to see what happens when his athleticism declines 5%, because that may be
enough.
I don't
think the brain is age-proof, Zach. I understand your point, and I think it's a really good one. And right, there's not old man skills. Bill James first wrote about this, you know, years ago. If you enter the league where other people wind up, where do you evolve to? You know, so there's less margin for error. Bill James writing about baseball, of course. I don't think the brain is age-proof. This, you know, if you look at the history of chess, you would assume that as players accumulate knowledge, that's wisdom, and it's not physical, and so you can, as you get older, you get better and better and better until you die, right? You're going to be the greatest ever. Intuitively, that feels right. That's why if you watch like the Kung Fu flicks, the most powerful guy is the guy with the old long white beard, right? Because
yes.
He has accumulated the most knowledge. It's not the way it works in chess. You have a prime, and it coincides roughly, although later, that with the physical prime of an athlete. And part of that is because it's there's a, you know, a degree of stamina you need and everything else. A part of it is because a young man has a bigger imagination and more daring than an old man. And the corollary in the NBA, I would say, because I don't think it's about imagination and daring as an older player.
Although those are great words to describe how Draymond plays, actually.
For sure, for sure. But he's going to need that to keep playing at that level. But it's the league changes, even in subtle ways. And you've had success your whole life and your whole career doing it your way. And then there are little – look what happened to Carmelo Anthony. I mean, that's an extreme example, like almost a hyperbolic example, right? But it can also happen to a player like Draymond where you just assume, hey, the basketball brain's going to age just fine. Maybe yes, maybe no. I don't think – I think it's intuitive to believe that, but I don't know if it's correct, in fact.
Fair. I think a basketball player's career age-wise ends so early that I don't know how much of that will happen
sure.
to him either way. But
you know who I like, Draymond?
Hmm.
On the Knicks. When you think about – and I'm not a Knicks fan anymore. As long as Dolan owns the team, I'm not rooting for them. But when you think about the perfect player – who's the perfect player to play next to Draymond? And then who's the perfect player to play next to Kristaps? Same guy. Like those two work perfectly together. And I think that would be like a team
one
that might
be
interested.
One of the great things about Porzingis is that he gives you almost infinite choice among big man partners. Like, because he can shoot, he can protect the rim, so you can get someone who's not a great shooter, you can get someone who's not a great rim protector, you get someone who does one and not the other. It's just like
and a guy who's going to get on the ground for loose balls in their front court.
Yeah,
if you got Kristaps, he's too tall, right? Like, so you get a guy who can do all that stuff, who can pass, who you can play five out with still. But who's not going to be a rim defender.
It's honestly what we're seeing with Anthony Davis, who's a better player than Porzingis, and it's not particularly close,
Meredith,
obviously. But, you know, their big man pairings are Anthony Davis and a classic stretch four and Mirotić, and Anthony Davis and a bowling ball who can't shoot and Julius Randle. It's like, oh, but they both work. That's a good idea. The Anthony Davis, whatever you want to put around him, it works, which is why the whole league is going to be trying to get Anthony Davis, like now, and especially this summer. You may have heard of this company, 23andMe, that has gotten a little buzz lately. 23andMe is named for the 23 pairs of chromosomes that make up our DNA. It's a personal genetic service that helps you understand what your DNA can tell you about you and your family story, your history, all that stuff. As all your loved ones get together this Thanksgiving, discover more about the genetic connections you share. The 23andMe Ancestry service allows you to do a bunch of things. Among them, see how your DNA breaks down across 150 regions all over the world. You can trace parts of your ancestry to a specific group of individuals from over 1,000 years ago. That's how far back goes. You can discover how much Neanderthal DNA you inherited. That sounds kind of cool. It's easy to do. All you do is spit into the tube provided in your 23andMe kit. Register your sample to your personal 23andMe account, and in a few weeks, you receive your personalized online reports. With 23andMe's ancestry composition report, you can explore where your DNA is from. You can explore genetic similarities and differences between you and your relatives. You can share reports for family members. It's better dinner time conversation at Thanksgiving than politics. And now through Thanksgiving, 23andMe Ancestry Service kits are available for only $49 per kit when you buy two or more. That's 50% off the regular kit price of $99 for the holiday. Order your 23andMe Ancestry Service kit at 23andme.com/low, my last name, L-O-W-E. That's 23andme.com/low. The bottom line is this. I thought someone with the Warriors put it well to me last night. I said, does any of this happen if KD is not a free agent? And the response was like, what do you mean? I said, well, do you suspend him? What I meant was, does he get suspended? Does Draymond get suspended if KD's under contract for 2 or 3 years? And the response was, I don't think you're looking at it the right way. The free agency is everything. It's hovering over everything. The incident doesn't go the way it is if KD's not a free agent.
Totally
agree with you. It's hovering over everything, and I think it's real, and they don't know and haven't known if he's going to stay or not. And
well, that's the calculation they now have to make. Do we virtue signal to KD?
When did that become a thing that people said?
Virtue signal?
Yeah.
It's like around our politics. Okay. You know?
I understand that, but well, it's one of those terms I just didn't hear until like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I would
ago.
Say with the rise of a very ugly faction of Americans, you know. Yeah. Anyway, the point is that that if they're virtue signaling to KD through what they're doing with Draymond, look, we suspended him for a day. Look, we may trade him. And they, you know, like, but is that worth, or is a bird in the hand better? And you think you may lose KD anyway, let's hold on to Draymond. I would say any way you slice it, Draymond's going to have trade value in the offseason. He's in the last year of his deal. You're not going to want to pay him if you're Golden State. Go get something for him. Whether you lose KD or not, you're going to want to get something for Draymond while the get, you know, trade him a year too early instead of a year too late.
This offseason is going to be absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, and by the way, no, KD does not have to be committed to the extent you do, Draymond. He's so much more talented. Like, you know, it's not, life isn't fair. And this is the way this stuff works.
Yeah.
KD put you over the top. No, he didn't earn it like you. No, he didn't build you guys up. No, he wasn't part of the culture the same way. Yes, he benefits from your existence and Steph's existence and Clay's existence and Steve Kerr's existence and all that stuff. Yes, 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 yes. And he's reversed engineered his legacy and it's kind of BS. I get all that. It's all true. Nevertheless, he's so much better than you. Everyone's going to choose him.
And to your point, and I've said this many times before, one of the fake series that never happened that I would love to see played somehow is the non-KD Warriors against the 2017 Cavs. The first year that KD is there and they win in five and KD hits the first of his big shots in Cleveland. I would, cause that 2017 Cavs team they turned it on in the playoffs and they just stomped the entire East and looked like a completely dominant team. And I think that would have been a great series. I might even pick the Cavs to win that series. But then you throw Durant, it's like, it's just not, they just have too much talent.
Fair.
And that's all of the stuff we're talking about now is just all about the summer, because I just don't know if it even matters if they hate each other all year. And I'm not saying they hate each other now, to be clear. If Draymond and KD just have a total social falling out, there's still, apologies to Toronto, you know, Boston's one game over. Like, there's just no one who can touch these guys. Right. Even the Raptors operating at all cylinders. The Raptors are 12-2, I think. Great team, deep, built the right way. Like, they closed the last game they lost, but they had, finally they played Lowry, Green, Leonard, Ananobi, Siakam at center. That's a lineup. That's a Warriors lineup. That's a
almost,
lineup tailor made to beat the Warriors.
And Ananobi is like what the younger, more athletic PJ Tucker. You know, he's kind of exactly what you're looking for.
PJ Tucker is just a Mack truck. I've been watching the Rockets the last week or so carefully as they try to get it together, and he's just so good defensively, just everywhere.
But
position.
But here's the one thing I'll say about Toronto. The San Antonio Spurs were not going to beat the Warriors.
You know, it's,
however, when last seen healthy in the playoffs, San Antonio had a 23-point lead on that.
That's another one.
Lineup.
That's another of my I wish I could see it series.
Yes. Now, they were going to lose that series. I'm just saying.
Totally agree.
The reason I believe a healthy Kawhi is the second best player in basketball behind LeBron and ahead of KD is because he has been the best player on a championship team. And even when they were no longer a championship team, even when they weren't very good at all, really, when you looked at their spare parts, he had a 23-point lead on a team at the half. I know it was very early, but I'm going to say he would have taken them 6 games. I just pure conjecture. I think he would have won at least one, maybe two games.
Well, let's assume they win one. They win the first one where
Kawhi
they're up.
Is, and so now Toronto has Kawhi. You know what else Toronto has? This is like some guys just know what they're looking at. So, like, who are the best teams in basketball? The smartest front offices. In the West, it's Golden State, and Daryl Morey is still there, obviously. And in the East, it's Danny Ainge and Masai Ujiri. They know because they played at a certain level. Whatever it is, they have a brilliance for it. They can look at a guy and make an assessment and understand what they're looking at. But you can map anybody on a bell curve. You can plot them on a bell curve, including analytics guys, sabermetricians, whatever. And you can see that some of them are worth more than the middle of the – most people fall in the middle of the pack. Some actually bring value. Some actually drag you down. Ujiri and Ainge – are on the extreme right end of the bell curve. They know what they're looking at. So Ejiri has been able to assemble a real good collection of parts who would have no business on the floor with the Warriors, except he grabbed Kawhi Leonard. And it gives him, like, I don't know, like, basketball is pretty much...
And everyone happened. Like, I understand there were, like, there were rumors, reports that he told DeMar, I'm not going to trade you. And everyone in Toronto loves DeMar, and they should. DeMar's a great guy, great player. Like, the reaction to that trade was sort of like borderline hysterical. Like it was the first big trade that had ever happened. I'm sitting there like, you just got Kawhi Leonard. DeMar, he's way better than DeMar DeRozan.
The reason Toronto lost to the Cavs is not because LeBron James has a psychological whammy on them. It's because you cannot beat. You're not ever going to make the finals.
Him.
You're never going to make the finals if DeMar DeRozan's your best player. This is what I mean about max deals. You got to be careful. And primarily because he can't shoot, right? But Kawhi Leonard, anything DeMar DeRozan can do, he can do better, especially defensively, but also shoot from range. Now you have the best player in the East probably. And yeah, you're going to make, not only are you probably going to make the finals, but you know,
I'm not ready.
You're not going to beat Golden State.
And well, that's the thing. Like you look at that lineup. It's a great lineup. OG Anunoby's good. Pascal Siakam. I've been driving. I'm not on the Pascal Siakam bandwagon. I built it with my bare hands, and I'm driving it. Like the Warriors' best lineup is Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and then two of the three, in my opinion, best players in the NBA, or two of the four or five, and whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like it's just not fair.
You know what you're saying, really? When you're constructing a championship team, you see Anunoby and Siakam. Boy, they're great players. No. In fact, they actually bring you down as good as they are. If you want to win a championship, one is starting. They're both rotation pieces on a championship team, sure. But if you have one of them starting, the level of your other starters, if you're talking about winning a championship, have to be so absurdly good. You know, it's not enough just to say, oh, yeah, he can do the job. Like Danny Green can start on a championship team. If he's on the Warriors, if he's doing Klay Thompson's job not as well as Klay Thompson.
Or if he's on the 2014 Spurs.
If he's on the 14 Spurs, then fine. Otherwise, if Danny Green's a starter, you can have one other non-all-star starter and he better be damn good. And then two of your guys better be MVP caliber players. It is gangster out there. It's always been that way in the NBA too.
Yeah.
You want to win a championship, you have to construct essentially an unfair roster. Once every 10 years, a Dirk Nowitzki Mavs team wins or an 04 Pistons team wins. But otherwise, it is always the team where you go, this is not even fair.
It's like
anymore.
You just line them up on paper. It's like, oh, this the other team's just better. And as wonderful as the Siakam story has been, he was player of the week last week. No one ever thought that would happen.
Yeah.
The Raptors are very curious. To see, now he's been on a 3-point shooting hot streak for him. The Raptors are very curious what's it going to look like in the playoffs because people only kind of guard him now. They're not going to guard him at all in the playoffs. And like if he doesn't make shots, and you know how the playoffs are, you go 0-for-7 from three. All of a sudden, the confidence starts. The spotlight's on you. People are asking you about it. It's different. Before I let you go, give me quick thoughts on Jimmy Butler.
The history of the NBA is the team that acquires the best player if they're in their prime still wins the deal, and I suspect that they won the deal. The problem is, as I was telling Stephen A. on the air the other day, Sam Hinkie rolled the boulder all the way to the top.
I saw kinetic
energy.
Yeah, kinetic and potential energy.
So he created all this potential energy by moving that boulder bit by bit all the way up to the top of the hill. The kinetic energy is when it's realized as it rolls down, right? The ball is now at the bottom of the hill. Whatever you were going to have, you now have. And what you have to show for that half decade of work is Ben Simmons, a great but flawed player, Jimmy Butler, who is ideally the third best player on a championship team. He's probably the third best player on this team, and Embiid, who is awesome.
That dude is so good.
He's so good.
It's ridiculous. I think he shot 20 foul shots again the other night.
He's good. But you know what the problem with that team, as I see it, is Embiid shoots a lot of threes, doesn't hit him enough. He's not quite as good a shooter as he thinks he is. And the same can be said for Butler. And Simmons won't even shoot. So the long and short of it is the Sixers didn't get enough for all that work because they foolishly got rid of Hinkie and replaced him with a bad GM whose biggest move will be remembered for sending a first-round pick the other way in addition to essentially Jason Tatum for Markelle Fultz. And what that means is that this Sixers team will never win a championship. So they got a little
never,
better.
Never.
Not this. No, not with these guys. No, they're not going to win a championship.
So
Okay, so you're going to say this doesn't matter because it's all on the fringes. And like, in a practical speaking terms, you may be right and you may not be. They still have Zaire Smith, who hasn't played, and they still have the Heat's number one pick in 2021, which could be, and they still have 20 to 28 million in cap room this summer. So I'm just...
It's going to take a brilliant GM to pull all that.
All of that is just to say, I don't think this is necessarily it. I don't think they're boxed in. They're not boxed in, but... You know, once all those contracts kick in, which is very soon, and Elton Brand already came on this podcast and said, we're not negotiating a max contract with Ben Simmons. We are just giving it to him. That's all it is. Like, then you are close to boxed in. And that is where we're going to be talking about the Fultz trade in 20 years. I mean, that's where that
Imagine
trade.
If they had Tatum on the team right now.
And by the way, Tatum's not had a great year, but Markel
Fultz. No,
he's
off to a slow start.
He's not pump faking free throws.
Right.
And having another with another trainer.
Zach, we see guys who we look at and say, that guy could be the focal point of a championship offense. Tatum is that level talent, right? I mean, like, I think he is. So, like, I know he's off to a slow start, but
I disagree.
I think he's a championship level.
I think maybe he
focal point talent.
I'll tell you why I disagree. And I think, look, he's 20, so I don't know what the hell he's going to look like at 26.
Right,
but
extrapolate.
But right now,
no, right, not at this moment.
Okay,
they're not going to win the title.
I was going to say his playmaking is discouraging to me when I extrapolate.
Okay,
and his tendency to settle for 20 footers, which he has fought against the last three games. Clearly, someone on the coaching staff said to him, "Stop doing this and go to the rim."
But a lot of that is because he and Brown absorbed those Hayward minutes last year, and they had a point guard eventually where the ball didn't stick with him, and so they had to move it more.
Yeah.
So, like, part of that circumstance, I think, in terms of talent, if you put Jason Tatum next to Embiid with Simmons on the team, and then you have Saric and Covington and whoever you're going to get for those guys if you don't want to keep them. Now you ask me if they have a championship window. Hell yeah. But if what you realized was Simmons, Butler, and Embiid, you're not as good as Toronto. You're not as good as Boston. You're probably not as good as Milwaukee because of Budenholzer and because of the Greek Freak. So, like, this
so
is what you got.
Let's zoom out. We don't know what Toronto is in eight months. We don't know if Kawhi's on the team. Kyle Lowry's 33. We don't know what that team is. Boston, we kind of don't know what that team is yet. And if you don't think that they are going to try to trade for Anthony Davis this summer, I'm sorry to tell you that they're going to. The minute, if and when Anthony Davis says no to the Supermax, which if I had to guess right now, I would say he's going to say no to the Supermax, the Celtics will be trying to get him.
And they'll be able to offer the best deal.
And the Bucks have the best player probably of all these teams. They're going to have to pay Chris Middleton, which makes me wonder if Eric Bledsoe's on it. Like, I'm just not sure the Bucks have like a clear linear path other than Giannis taking another.
But this is my argument I'll make to you. You're looking at tactics. I'm looking at structural advantages, like strategic advantages. You're right about those details. Where's the brain power? Remember I said, like, look at Golden State and then look at Boston and Toronto. It's brain power, right? Where's the brain power? Ujiri, who do you have faith in is going to maneuver it so they have a good team? I have faith in, like, Popovich. Spurs are still pretty good. They have nobody on the team. They're still pretty good.
It's funny. There's always – I was going to tweet this today. There's always one team 20 games into the season, and we're getting there quickly, where I'm like, man, it doesn't matter how many times I've watched them. I just don't have any feel for what they are. And this year it's the Spurs. I have no feel for the Spurs.
Here's the feel you do have. They're competent.
They're always going to be competent.
Right, because they got Popovich. And what I'm saying about the Celtics and the Raptors is that's where the brains are in the East. Then I look at Milwaukee, and you're right about those details, but coach and quarterback, right? Coach and MVP caliber player. They got a winner. They got an excellent coach. Everyone's open all the time. That's why Middleton's knocking down 46% of his threes. And they got an MVP caliber player. Structurally, I think those are advantages that Philly doesn't have. I like Brett Brown. I don't think he's Budenholzer. And I don't trust the organization in terms of the brains. And, you know, I don't know how well Simmons and Embiid are getting along and what that relationship will be long term. And I think you're dealing with some structural issues in Philadelphia.
I will say, you know, 1 + 1 + 1 in the NBA doesn't always equal 3. And I think, there are some teams where 1 + 1 + 1 equals 3. There are some teams like the Warriors where you really hit the home run, and I'm not saying three players, but like 1 + 1 + 1 = 4.
It's
for the
chemistry,
Warriors.
Like literally chemistry, yeah. where like, you know, stuff is freed up through a chemical reaction that makes you more than the sum of your parts.
1 + 1 + 1 = 4 for Golden
State. It's not
State.
Addition, it's chemistry.
I think this could be 1 + 1 + 1 = 2.75
right.
or 2.5.
Like, what does Butler do to Markelle Fultz? Does he make him or break him?
I think it's already time to say, look, I don't think they've agreed to max out Butler explicitly because that's against the rules. I'm sure they're going to come to an agreement that's close to the max. Once you do that, there is just no place for Markelle Fultz on your team because you cannot pay him a lot of money. So either what happens is he's still bad and you keep him, but he's bad because he's cheap and bad, in which case he doesn't matter. Or he gets somewhat okay and he's a former number one pick, so he expects to get paid and somebody pays him and it's not you. It might be a little premature, but to me it's already time to write Markelle Fultz out of like the 2021 Sixers.
What would be hilarious, and I, you know, not to Jimmy Butler, but it would be like one of those cosmic ironies that would be just too terrible and also hilarious, is they just, like, what really happened in Minnesota, forget about Karl Anthony Towns, Jimmy Butler, get it through your head. Maybe Karl Anthony Towns could be the best player in a championship team. You cannot be. They're going to pay him. When they gave Andrew Wiggins Butler's money, because it's finite, they're finite resources, when they gave, who's not good, Andrew Wiggins is not a good NBA player, they gave him Butler's money, who is a good NBA player. That, I mean, if I were Butler, I'd have gone nuclear, which he did, and now he's out of town. Could you imagine if Markelle Fultz had some kind of miracle turnaround and they gave Markelle Fultz Butler's money? Oh my God. Like, what would Butler be like? You gotta be kidding me.
I will say I'm a little more optimistic. Look, as soon as they got Jimmy Butler, I mean, I tweeted it. I said, you know, the fit is not as clean as it would have been with Kawhi Leonard or Paul George, guys who are really good shooters, right. You know, play off the ball a little bit more, although Kawhi is kind of more ball dominant than people think. Like, that's all true. It's obvious. Like, there's not a lot of shooting on this team. The role delineation is going to be hard. I just think the talent is so good, and Butler, I think, will shoot better from three if he accepts a certain diet of looks that I don't think he's going to have any choice but to accept. And defensively, those three are so good that I think I'm a little more optimistic than I get why. Look, I questioned it too. I get why the fit isn't ideal, and I get what you're saying. I kind of want to see it breathe a little bit because I'm actually a little more optimistic that 1 + 1 + 1 could approach 3. I don't think it gets to 4. I don't think.
But maybe it's 3.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a pretty good 3. Butler is interesting because, first of all, he shoots the 3 a little better than I realized. I looked up the actual shooting percentages. It was about 37% 2 years ago, 35% last year, and about 38% this year.
You're right on. I'm looking at it.
Right.
Now.
Like just a tick on, like, you know, by tenths of a point. That's a pretty good 3-point shooter. He shoots a bunch of them, but that's kind of like what Harden shoots, more or less. That's what Westbrook shoots in a good year, what Harden shoots in a little bit of an off year. That's good enough. But one of the things that makes Butler special is he believes he's a little better than he actually is. It's one of the reasons, like, people who prefer him to Klay Thompson. I'm not saying I do, but when they're compared, the people who make the Butler argument say he's more of a star. He kind of views himself that way a little more. But it also limits, like, you saw some of the shots he was taking in the playoffs with Minnesota, the bad shots, and he's not good enough to make. It's not Kobe Bryant taking a bad shot and making them, it's Jimmy Butler taking a bad shot and missing it. And Embiid doesn't shoot the three well enough to take as many as he does, and Simmons doesn't shoot at all, and you wonder if it's a little bit dead end. On the other hand, it's the Daryl Morey philosophy, really. If you need something, go identify an undervalued commodity that you think is really, really good, or just get the best all-star you can get, which is also the history of the NBA.
Yeah.
Trade guys who are not all-stars for him, and you figure it out later, and that may be what we're looking at with Philadelphia.
No, they didn't get PG. Didn't get a meeting. Nobody did. Right. They got a fake meeting with LeBron's people and not LeBron. Right. My guess is they have intel that Kawhi is not going there. My educated guess is that that's the case. And, like, sure, there will be player X, Y, and Z that become available the next 2 or 3 years that fit better. I understand their inclination saying, hey, we can't wait forever. Like, we just like, and Jimmy Butler's not 33. He's 28 or 29 or whatever. It's not like he's old. Like, he's a little ahead of our timetable. But we can't just sit here and wait for the next Kyrie Irving, the next 25-year-old star who is randomly available that wants to come to us. Like, and I understand that. I also think one of the underrated things about Jimmy Butler, and something I'd like to see back in his game a little more, he's a really good off-ball player, like a really nasty physical cutter, like kind of gets like just shoves dudes off and cuts to the rim and like can just sort of duck in for quick post-ups. Like that kind of stuff is going to be useful for him on this team. I'd like to see him kind of re-engineer that part of his game. So I don't think they're going to win the East this year. I was down on them to begin the year and high on Milwaukee for everything you just said. They just make sense. There's value in the NBA of like, it just makes sense. Like Giannis and shooting. All right, I can roll with that. Like, don't have
the most aggressive tall player who ever lived with a bunch of shooters around him.
Yeah. We don't got to overcomplicate it. Just do that. Brooke Lopez, take 15 threes. Like, if you're open, just keep shooting. That makes sense. Anyway, you've got to go. You have actual things to do. Max Kellerman, it's a joy to talk. It's always fun to watch you. And I love this. You're all in on the NBA. We got to do this again.
Anytime.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Zach.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.